I welcome you to this chapter number 3, titled Reality, Resistance and Resolution. We have gone through chapter number 1 and chapter number 2 of this book, Integrative Manager. In chapter number 1, we talked about what is integrative management in terms of case studies, etc. People who made difference in the way they thought and they made certain breakthroughs from different lines of business. In chapter number 2, we have covered a certain type of a framework, a type of a thinking process, a type of a cognition process which all integrative thinkers have. We also talked about the difference between conventional thinking versus integrative thinking. And now in this chapter, we are going to be talking about the importance of understanding the reality and the resistance that we face whenever we are taking decisions, and the resolution, what comes as an outcome in terms of action. So let's get on with what this chapter is going to unfold. After completing this session, you will be able to understand how to keep options open. In any decision making, what we do, we have number of options. We eliminate options. But this says that you'll not eliminate options, you'll keep them open. When there is a choice between A and B, I take the decision A, I eliminate B. Do I keep B also open and active so that A and B both can be used together? By now we all know this is what is integrative management. Second is process of filtering information. How do we filter information? Filtering means you're listening to me. There are many words I am saying right now. You will be into what is called as selective listening. You will interpret whatever I am saying your way. Each one of us does it. I have interpreted this particular approach of integrative management my way. Somebody else will read the same book, will go through the same approach, and they will interpret it differently. Now this happens because within us, we selectively filter information. This is what we all do. So we'll try and understand how this process of filtering information takes place. Recognizing the different alternatives. What are the different choices and alternatives that are there? Recognizing it and validating it. Accepting the fact that they also exist and they have a usefulness. Usually what happens is when I have made a choice A, I stand by the choice and I start promoting the choice A. And I also by default or design try to condemn B. Now recognizing the different alternatives tells me how, in spite of B not to my taste, I still need to have the objectivity to recognize its importance. There are people who are also using B. Just because I like A and I'm using A, I don't reject B and I don't allow B to flourish. So that is what you need to recognize, the different alternatives. Reconciling a resolution that would be superior to existing alternative. Could I think of something which is superior to the choice A I have made? Could it be a combination of A and B? Could it be another choice C? That's what we call reconciling the resolution that would be superior to either alternative. Something that is more sustaining, which is doing more group good. Right? And then we talk about the learn the ability to separate reality from the modes of perceived reality. There is what is called as absolute reality, which none of us can capture. Now this absolute reality, this particular pointer in my hand, is a reality. Now I will capture this reality through my mode of perceived reality. I will perceive it in one way and I will explain it to you what this pointer is all about. One of you will look at it and explain it in a different way. And we can go on and on and on explaining this particular pointer, but yet the reality will never be captured 100% by any of us. That is the truth, right? So we'll go through all these learning objectives in this chapter. Now the structure, as we usually have, it starts with the opposable mind, a discussion on that, how integrative thinkers keep their options open, difference in perception, when opposition and opposites collide, reconciling the irreconcilable, common path to unique solutions, we'll have the summary and we'll take a small example to conclude the chapter. So let's start off by talking about the opposable mind. Integrative thinking is the ability to face constructively the tension of opposing ideas and instead of choosing one at the expense of the other, generate a creative resolution of the tension in the form of a new idea that contains elements of opposing ideas but is superior to each. A long definition about which we already know by now. So let's go along and see what Roger Martin has written. Roger Martin is a person who wrote a book called The Opposable Mind. In fact, our entire treatment of this particular topic is based on his findings. We have drawn a lot of inspiration from him, right? So Roger Martin says in this book, quote unquote, complexity presents a cognitive challenge that integrative thinkers welcome because they know that complexity brings along in its train an opportunity for breakthrough resolution. In chapter number 2, I had discussed a particular the difference between chaos and complexity. Now, integrative thinkers look at complexity not as chaos. Since they look at things as complex, what happens is they are in a position to bring about certain integration. When a thing is complex, it looks messy, but it is not messy for the person who looks at it as complex. He knows that as of now, it doesn't make sense, but something tells him that I can connect and make sense. And he dares to connect. He dares to connect. That's what Roger Martin talks about in this particular quote. Taking it further, why do so few people use integrative thinking? Why is it that very few people use integrative thinking? Let's understand this. Everybody knows that A and B exist. People who love A, they know that B is existing, but they do not want to accept B at all. People who are living with B will say that A is existing, but they don't want to accept A. Now this resistance is there in all of us to not accept the other. What makes it happen? Now that resistance is one of the barriers of you and I not being naturally integrative thinking. So integrative thinking is not the factory setting of our brains. Very interesting terminology, factory setting. See, when you fix up a machine, the machine, once you fix it, starts producing components in a mass form. It will start creating components in huge numbers. All you need to do is to set the machine like a robot. So when I set a machine, it is put into what is called as a factory setting. In a factory, when we are manufacturing components, we set the machines. Now similarly, many of us, we set our brains into what is called as a factory setting. Now in the factory setting, what do? We have one experience or a set of experiences which produces results. And we say that since if this produces results, my way is the only way. Since this produces results, my way is the only way. Now this being the case, once, twice, thrice, a number of times, I become rigid. Another loose word, a very colloquial word will be, factory setting means a rigid mind. Rigid not by design, but it just happens due to habit. I have done it like this. It has succeeded number of times. I am a success story myself. So why should I change? That's my factory setting. So people who come with that mindset would find it quite challenging to understand integrative thinking. In a typical leadership training, for example, I encourage people to come out of the factory setting. I tell them the importance of validating their own past successes, at the same time embracing the other point of view which they have not been accepting so far. Because when you rise higher in the organization, what happens is we have to include all points of views. If you come from one single vertical thinking and then you say that success factors I can use for other generic functions and managing and leading people, it's quite challenging. It's not that easy. So one has to understand both, and many, not only both, as many as possible, right? Now what is the effect of filtering? Now integrative thinking is not the factory setting of our brains. Since our experience and our education favors conventional thinking, our minds have a natural tendency to filter data as we build models of our experience. This is what is called as a process of selection. There's a room wherein the shoot is going on. I got my colleague sitting behind, and there is this camera which I'm facing right now. I'm talking to you, you're listening to me later on after the recording is over. Now in this room there are a number of features. Those features which are relevant to me, which are salient to me, is what I will capture. There may be something which is not captured by me right now. There may be some feature in the room which is not captured by me now. I don't give it importance. It is not salient to me. Since it is not salient to me, for me it doesn't exist. For me it doesn't exist. So what do? I have a natural way of eliminating something even if it is in front of me. This is done by all human beings. Good or bad is not the question. The reality is that we all do it. There's a purpose for which we are doing it. We'll discuss it down the line. Right? Now, what is the effect of filtering our perceptions of reality? As our brain filters data, we create narratives or mental models of our reality. Of our reality. Take a typical newspaper headlines which you read. The same newspaper headlines is read by 5 people. Each of us will interpret it our way and will stand by what we say. We'll back it up with an argument. And we'll also prove that not only that I'm right, even that you're wrong. This is what happens when we filter data. If the other people are going to tell you, look at it from this point of view, see it this way, you refuse to see it and will challenge it by saying that my way is the best way. This is very natural. Why we do it is an important part we need to understand. Many people tell you that you must look in all directions. Many people will tell you that you must be integrative everything. Everybody tells us this. And many people say that we must be tolerant with everybody. All that is lovely and sublime. Yes, it is important. Then we have to ask ourselves a question before I change myself. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Now, this is something which is a starting point which very few people address. People condemn this type of a thinking, saying that you're prejudiced, you're biased, you have your own opinion, and you stay on to that. These are the things which we often hear. Fair enough. When I am telling you that you're biased, you're prejudiced, who is also biased and prejudiced? Also me. Now, such a type of a conversation which happens in many organizations as well, does it bring long-lasting results? People are only waiting to prove their point, create a success, put down someone. Until that person also comes up, he shows that he is more successful, he puts you down, and this type of war keeps going on and productivity goes down. And important things which are strategic nature to the organizations are missed out. That's where strategic thinking, integrative thinking, all have to be properly coming together. Right? So, as our brains filter data, we create narratives or mental models of our reality. Because our minds tend to unconsciously add meaning to our experience, unconsciously, our narratives are only representations of the reality that we experience and not the reality itself. Take a cup of tea, give it to 2 people, 2 cups of tea, same from the same source, one will say it's good, the other one will say it's not good. Go to a film, watch a film, 2 people are watching the same film, one will give his opinion, the other one will give her opinion. And both of them will give different opinions. Right? Now that is a reality. Now, fighting the reality, saying that you're wrong, I am right, is again getting into the same trap. Leaders don't do that. Leaders don't say that you're right and I am wrong. Never. Good leaders will say, fine, that's your point of view. Fine. We'll see how this point of view can be taken into integrating others' points of view as well. And that requires a certain amount of openness from you and me. Right? So, taking it further, how do cognitive features of the salience, causality, architecture and resolution shape up our narrative? We spoke about these 4 elements in the earlier chapter. Salience, causality, architecture and resolution. Now, what is it that conventional people do, what happens in their brain that makes them stick on to only few salient features, not multifarious? That's what we're discussing right now. The human brain is easily overwhelmed by too much data. A typical example is, you know, when you go to the shopping mall, when you enter the shopping mall, you get overwhelmed by everything. Is it not true? And you get so overwhelmed, you know, there's a sale going on, there is some huge, another sale going on in another maybe shop or something, and there's a launch of a new cell phone or something, so many things are going on there. As soon as you enter, the whole impact overwhelms you. And many people stay overwhelmed even beyond that. With the result, they make wrong judgments, wrong purchases. All of us are victims to that, isn't it? Now, this overwhelming of excessive data, it happens to us. Now, when this happens to us, in all of us, we have a certain type of a system. The brain has got a system which says, I shall take only this, this I do not want. It is not a conscious choice. It just happens because at the cognitive level, you want to survive. It is for the purpose of survival. Subconsciously, we eliminate things that does not make us survive. Right? So the brain's perceptual system fragments and salient data is eliminated as the brain attacks the problem. So I may walk into a shopping mall and I am a person, maybe I like to buy clothes. Now when I go there, I get overwhelmed by a lot of sale offers, music going on. There are some antiques out there, somebody is doing some tricks or something. Now all those things will be there, and for a moment I look at all that, I get overwhelmed, then I'll take a deep breath perhaps, and then what I would do is I might just go along and start focusing on clothes. Why? Because my area of perception is clothes. Just to give an example, right? This in turn leads to elimination of important causality factors, development of limited architecture and unsatisfactory resolution. Let's assume in this particular example, my wife is with me. And both of us are going. Now her salience is different. She wants to buy maybe some beauty, some cosmetic products. So when she comes with me to buy the cosmetic products, I start saying, look, I am not coming with you and I am not interested. Or I may trivialize her. I may say, oh, that's all not so, it's humbug. Now she'll put the same thing on me saying that, why are you wasting so much on your clothes? This matters because that is salient for her, cosmetics. For me, clothes matter because that is salient for me. And both of us go for shopping. And when we go there, there could be several scenarios which we can think of. Both of us go together, we get into criticism of each other, buy nothing and come back. Or she goes her way, I go my way, then both of us come back after we make our purchases, only to criticize each other's purchases. These are various scenarios we come across, don't we? Now, this is coming because who's right, who's wrong? Nobody. But one of us will sit in judgment. That's human nature. This is what happens when you're into conventional thinking. Either I will tell my wife, look, everything that you're doing is wrong. Wasting money on lipsticks, wasting money on cosmetics. She'll say, you are stupid. You're wasting your money on so much of clothes, you have so much of shirts and ties, yet you're spending money on this. And the stronger of the two will always prevail. This is exactly what happens in corporates also. In a corporate, the operation person thinks in operations. The marketing person thinks in marketing. If the marketing person is stronger, he's got more influencing power, then he will always bully the operations guys. And the organization itself will be a market-driven organization, not an operations-driven organization. I want you to connect this particular subject with what actually happens in organizations. Once you know that, then you will be willingly inducing the subject into your thinking and actions. Right? So, in turn, what happens? It leads to elimination of important causality factors, development of limited architecture and unsatisfactory resolution. All the four terms are mentioned here. So, when I go for the shopping, what is salient to me? On the basis of that, I start thinking causality. And then I start creating an architecture. I said, fine, I'm going to buy shirts and trousers of this particular brand, of this pricing. That's my architecture. Then the resolution is I go and buy it. Same thing my wife will do. So when both of us do this, what happens? We are into our respective causalities, architecture, etc. Now, this is the way we are operating life, and we say we agree to disagree. Very nice way of putting it. But when it comes to group effectiveness, when it comes to team synergy, when it comes to overall performance of the whole organization, this has a limitation. And that's a limitation because of which the integrative thinking is becoming more and more popular today. Because this is talking about the importance of understanding about how vital operations is as much as marketing is. So both of them need to come together, integrate each other's approach to make the organization happen much better, right? And what do conventional thinkers do with opposing models? As we often do not distinguish our models of reality from reality itself, the brain's natural tendency is to reject one model over the other. I've already explained through an example. Taking it further, this either-or orientation to problem solving prevents the activation of opposable mind. What do you mean by activation of opposable mind? Activation simply means that let me pause, ask myself a question about that particular salience which has not been my salience so far. Why is my wife giving importance to cosmetics? What are the various causalities that make her think the way she thinks? How does he create the architecture of going and buying those brands and the amount of money she's spending? How does she create that thing? If I understand this, I understand her mind. And then the resolution of the purchases that she makes. Now, when I do this to her and she is also doing this to me, you know what happens? There is a certain amount of integration about thoughts, ideas, and we start accepting certain things in a much more different way. To the extent to which next time when we go for a shopping, we'll be integrating both these salients together. Good couples who have got a lot of understanding, who must have perhaps not learned integrative management as a subject, are already doing it. They're already doing it, right? So, a conventional thinker mostly sees opposable models as truths which are to be defended or lies to be eliminated. What I think is my truth, it is the truth, and whatever you're thinking is lies. So what we do is we defend our point of view. This is what we do, most of us, right? How do integrative thinkers approach the opposing models? What do integrative thinkers actually do? They activate the opposable mind and then they start doing something. The way we do things are models of reality and not reality itself. The goals of analysis of opposing models are not to refute one model or the other, but to create a new model. Exploring the tensions among the models leads to the creation of a better one. The emergence of unpleasant trade-offs indicate a need to redesign the model from the ground up, from the scratch. Integrative thinkers take personal responsibility for finding a new model. If there's an integrative thinker in this example I gave you, he or she will start looking at it from an integrative model. What are the saliences of A? What are the saliences of B? How can we integrate them together? So that both of them are not working at cross purposes and creating toxic energy and conflicts. Let's face it, in all the conventional thinking, there is a hidden conflict, there's a latent conflict, there's always a certain amount of my point of view versus your point of view. And is that a healthy way of working? Is it a healthy way of mutual respect? No, it's not. It's all put on. It's all put on. At the time when there are critical incidents, this put on, this facade falls down. And when it falls on the real, things come out, wherein everybody likes to protect his own turf. Now, is there a good state of existence when there's a critical stage of the organization? Certainly not. Certainly not. If the organization is having a lot of critical integrative thinkers and action takers, then I would say that the organization would never come across such a type of a critical position where it's a do or die. Like the examples we have been explaining in the chapter 1, right? The emergence of unpleasant trade-offs indicates a need to redesign the model from the ground up, and integrative thinkers take a personal responsibility for finding a new model. They take it on themselves. If integrative thinking is such a good idea, why don't people use the opposable mind all the time? It's because of what I already said, the factory setting. And here Albert Einstein says a very important statement: reality is merely an illusion, albeit a persistent one. When I say something is real, I keep on reinforcing it persistently, saying that that is real. But it's an illusion, as per what Albert Einstein says. And it's a fact that my reality is an illusion. As much as your reality is an illusion, the actual reality is very different. Now, this may sound very philosophical for many of us, but the fact is, it's true. There is a reality. We see the sun, we see the moon, we see so many things around us. Everything is a reality which each of us are capturing in our own way. There's not a single person who will say that I know the reality totally. If he or she says this, there is something again that is missing which somebody else will discover. Right? So, taking it further, example is given here. Like your car's ignition timing, your computer screen's brightness, or washing machine's spin cycle, your mind emerges from a factory set with a specific mode and speed of operation. We get trained into it. Few factory settings get ever adjusted, and many of us would not know how to change them even if we wanted to. There are many people who say, yeah, I know that you're right, but I just can't accept it. That means the person says that I know that my factory setting is there, but I do not know how to come out of the factory setting. Typically, he goes for a training program. And then, you know, in 2 or 3 days, miracles are expected. It doesn't happen. Factory setting has been an investment that has happened in your life for a long period of time. Now, unlearning that takes a lot of willpower and a lot of willingness. When those are present in you, then you slowly, slowly start seeing the other's viewpoint and start accepting it. Right? But as with your car's ignition timing, computer screen's brightness, or washing machine's spin cycle, your mind setting can be adjusted if you know how. Your washing machine spin cycle is already adjusted by you. You mean to say it will always be remaining like that? No. When the clothes loading changes, or you want to change the water temperature, you want to make some changes, don't you go and readjust the machine? We do it. Similarly, when we have to get certain things done effectively, we need to readjust our factory setting of our mind. Is it possible? The answer is 100% yes. The difference between a machine and me is, the machine cannot think, we have to make it happen. But us as human beings is that we think, and so we can do it much more faster, much more easier. It is self-initiated. Nobody else need to tell us. We may go to an awareness guru, or we may go to a trainer or something, but those person will only show you a glimpse of what can be done, but the doing is still in my hands. It's what we talked about in chapter 1, doing versus thinking. Doing is ultimately something I have to take care of it. Integrative thinking looks very nice and it looks like the flavor of the season. Okay, that's not enough. If you put it into practice, then you know what you're talking. Otherwise, it remains as a concept. Very exciting management flavor of the season, and it tastes so well. Read it and forget about it. Remain wherever I am with my factory setting. That doesn't work. It has to be practiced. Right? So, one factory preset of the human mind is a tendency to assume that our models of reality are identical to reality itself. Okay, this is something which we all do.